Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello friends and welcome to your Monday morning edition of the Kings of Anglia Ipswich Town podcast. I'm sorry once again that we can't bring you news when Ipswich Town win. We can't even bring you news when Ipswich Town draw. It was another defeat at Brentford, but what a game it was at the weekend. So in traditional style now, I'm going to start with some bad news, good news. Bad news, Ipswich Town lost again. They gave up a 2-0 lead and lost, and they're now in the bottom three. Good news, they actually played bloody well. They scored three really good goals, and there's plenty to be positive about. Plus, Stuart Watson's off all week. Hooray! And I only really tolerate him for work. So when he's not around, it's tremendous. I know you all feel the same. So I'm joined by my two favourite kings today. Rossi, I'm going to start with you, the hairiest of all of us. How are you?
Still hairy. Still very hairy. But no, very good. We watched a very good game of football on Saturday. Just unfortunately, it wasn't the result we wanted. But all good and ready to dissect it all.
Yeah, AJ, you were just telling us off air how pleased you are that Stu's not around this week. You've got some, what would you call, creative differences. Two big egos fighting it out for top dog status. So now he's not around, you're like, yes, my time to shine.
Yeah, Kim Jong Stu and all. Should caveat that by saying that once again, just like what you did last week, that was an absolutely astonishing lie. That just is totally unfounded and came from nowhere, so fair enough. But also, yes, not having our de facto North Korean style leader here will be a different feeling for a week.
Yes, it'll be tremendous. Stu, I hope you have a great time. It's half term, I believe, this week, so enjoy it, my friend. Rest up, and you've got a big game to get ready for at Portman Road on Saturday, which clearly we'll be talking about in due course and then in much greater detail later on in the week. Right then, we're going to hear from Kieran McKenna first of all about this mad game. And then we're going to talk about it. And we're going to focus, friends. I make no apologies for this, because the last couple of shows post-match on a Monday have been quite negative-based, because there hasn't been an awful lot to be positive about. They didn't play very well in either of those games. But this game, they did play well. So we're going to focus. We're going to start with the positives this week, because there are plenty to talk about. But first of all, let's hear from Kieran McKenna.
Eventful game, rollercoaster of emotions. Sum up yours if you can, please, Kieran.
Yeah, it was an incredible game. Look, it's obviously a mixture of great pride in the performance on an individual level, on a team level. The quality, the resilience that we've shown through a really challenging week led to, you know, so many good things in the performance. And three goals away from home, and could have had a couple more. But of course, it's extreme disappointment, devastation about the late goal that means that we don't get any points for our efforts. But look, we always try and take the positive of things, and I think, you know, we showed so many things today that we're on the right track, that, to be honest, we're back on the right track for us. We showed our real identity as a team from a mental point of view and from a tactical point of view. And I think it was, although we didn't get any points to show for it, I think it was a real step in the right direction, that if we show those things on a consistent basis, we'll be competitive in the majority of the games and we'll have a chance to.
Okay then, AJ, you kick us off. Your opening thoughts on this one, because clearly from an Ipswich Town point of view, it's heartbreaking, and if you wear blue shirt, then you're going to be gutted by how it ended. But as a game, it was a pulsating, cracking, absorbing, compelling game of football.
I think most people in the stadium and who watched that from afar would have gone through the absolute ringer roller coaster of emotions from that one, because there was everything. You go 2-0 up and you're thinking, wow, 2-0, that's going to be hard for Brentford to come back. They do it in about 2 minutes. You have all the emotions of what happens with Harry Clark, the penalties. You get the late equaliser against all the odds and then lose. And then the Liam Delap moment right at the end. It had everything. I don't think I can think of a game that had everything in a way like this, which is kind of good to watch, but also horrible to watch. I think the way I described it was, it felt like a mixture of the Cardiff game last season, which was horrible, and the scenes after it were quite similar, and the whole game, which was end-to-end chaos, great fun, goals. If you mix those two together, I think you kind of get this. But my main takeaway, I think I'm sat here now feeling more positive than anything else. And the frustrations that I have, which I'll touch on later, more come from things like the reaction, things like watching Match of the Day and reading some of the bits that went up over the weekend, stuff like that. Because overall, I feel pretty happy with it. And you can sit here now just having a look at it. One of the fun stats I like. After 9 games, Ipswich Town have scored more goals in the Premier League than Manchester United.
So hey.
Have that. I like
excellent.
That.
A great stat to kick off with. Rossi, how was it for you?
It was mental. Obviously, much better than West Ham and Everton combined, because they were rubbish. But unfortunately, obviously, Town didn't get the win. So that's, you know, still not a win for Town after 9 games. But yeah, as a neutral, I'm sure they were loving watching that. But yeah, I'm sure the Town fans are that way. And of course, I know many of them. And they were heartbreak and annoyed. But I'm sure they took a lot of positives from it, because we did play much better. And I was one that didn't expect the start we had, because I think all of us did predict defeats. And I think many Town fans did as well. And to be 2-0 up, I was sort of like turning to other photographers next to me and going, what is going on? And we know that what happened to the rest. But yeah, positive to take, but still a lot of negatives.
Yeah, so we're going to them in due course. Clearly, there are negatives. And overall, you know, clearly, as a Town fan, as someone who follows Town, you're going to be disappointed because they lost the game. But hopefully now, with a little bit of space between the emotion of the end of the game and sitting here Monday morning, you can see there are a lot of positives to take. I mean, as you say, Ross, number one, we all said, I mean, AJ told us in his analysis of Brentford, they're really good at home. They start really quickly. They score a lot of goals really early. So for Town to go 2-0 up, a side like Brentford, who are really good at home and start quickly traditionally, was tremendous. And I think in terms of positive, I'm going to start there. They scored 3 really good goals, AJ, from open play, and really showed what they can do at this level.
They did. And I think that, again, spinning it into another positive and touching on a couple of different points here, this was the old guard as well doing it, which I think was important. We've seen players like Liam Delap step up. He did it again. We've seen others who've done the same. Sammy Smodic, yes, he got the goal. But two key parts in this were George Hurst and Connor Chaplin, who were part of the League One squad, which is fantastic. So the first goal, I think, is just done so well, and it's the pass from deep from Phillips. It latches on to George Hurst. He turns so well into space. For someone who's so kind of tall and lanky, he doesn't kind of seem like the person who can move the way that he does. So he does that really well, sets up Smodic. It's a really clever finish for Smodic. And then the second, the pass from Connor Chaplin.
Oh,
it's beautiful. The way he spins into space and picks that out. And then the finish from George Hurst, the way how he goes in. Then you think it's a hard one, because he hasn't really got the bodies in the box. It's not really an angle that it kind of felt like he should be shooting from. And not only does he do that, it's just the deft little chip in, which was brilliant. And might as well touch on the third one as well. We'll come on to that as well in a bit. But it's just brilliant. Again, it's such a nicely worked goal. And the thing that stood out for me, obviously they're down to 10 men at this point, but it came from nothing. The game felt like it was petering out. Brentford were not really turning the screw. Ipswich looked like they were struggling. And all it takes is one ball from Leif Davis, one pass out. It's a brilliant cross, lands at the feet of Delap. Brilliant first time finish. So 3 really well taken goals. And if it's not a crazy game, 3 goals wins you a game of football in the Premier League, even away from home. Unfortunately for Ipswich, it has ended up being a crazy game, so they don't. But taking the positives from that, the goals that they scored and their overall attacking play was not only really a huge improvement on what we've seen, that's not hard, but also just by Premier League standards, was really, really good.
Yeah, to score 3 goals away from home in the Premier League in any game is tremendous. 2 things I really liked with my slightly unusual eye on things. Number one, Sammy Smodic's knee slide after he scored was up there with the best I've seen in an Ipswich Town shirt. He times the salute perfectly, doesn't it? He just ends the salute just as a knee slide is coming to an end. up there with Lee Evans' effort all those years ago when he scored that hat trick at Portman Road, which to date is the best knee slide I've seen from an Ipswich Town player. And the other thing is the second goal, you mentioned Connor Chaplin's pass, AJ, but what I love about it was the boss approach, because there was another player coming back towards the ball, wasn't there? I think it might have been Smodics. And Chaplin just basically says, leave it to me, I've got it. Because he could already see the play unfolding in front of him. He knew where he's going to go with the ball. Just says, leave it, I've got this. And then plays a beautiful ball into Hurst and it's 2-0. Fantastic. Rossi, did you have a favourite of those three goals? And what did you make of the performance as a whole? Because, yes, they ended up losing again, but this was a very different performance to the previous two we've seen.
I just loved Liam Delap. So just his goal was just that striker's presence, just being in the box. Leif Davis delivery, boom, what a goal. And what a moment it was going to be, because it was going to be like a late equaliser and a lovely point and you know what happened the rest. But all three goals, as you already mentioned, were from open play and just really good team goals. And yeah, the Connor Chapman, George Hurst goal, just throwback to the Championship and League One era goals.
Yeah, it's exactly how it felt, wasn't it? It's exactly that kind of thing we're getting used to seeing, or had been used to seeing.
And it's in the top flight of English football, which is fantastic. And, you know, a great moment for George Hurst, you know, his first Premier League start and scoring his first Premier League goal, which is great. And obviously, going into the game, when we got the team news as well, that's another positive. And obviously a negative because there's loads of injuries, but there was no Sam Morsey. That is, when I first saw that, I thought, oh dear. And just that team, no one was expecting anything from them, really. I think from, you know, when it dropped at 1:45, went, oh God, it's going to be like a 5-6-0 defeat. But to be 2-0 up, you know, with that team, fair play to the boys. But yeah, we know what happened after that.
I mean, that's another positive for me, AJ. We know Town are all about running towards adversity and battling resilience and overcoming, which clearly is even harder to do at the level they're at now. But as Rossi said, given who was not playing in this game, we already know the injury problems going into it, and then not to have your captain, the guy who was meant to replace him, and also your kind of young star in Amari Hutchinson, all those missing as well. So to then start the way they did, but then also clearly they showed real resilience to go 3-2 down. They had Harry Clark sent off, when we'll talk about that in due course. But again, they showed that they're not just going to roll over. They got back into the game and yes, ultimately they lost it. But showing that resilience is always a good thing.
It is. And I kind of felt like they had the chance to do that before the game. It's easy to say that now when I was sat there, even when the teams come out and said they're going to lose the game probably. But I did have that feeling going into the game because I thought there's so much going against them here. I wonder if that will just give them the kick that they need. And Stu and I both felt that way when we walked down to the press box. And one of the things that stood out to both of us was, and I've not seen this before, as far as I'm aware, I don't know if you guys have, but there was a big huddle before they started doing the warm-ups. So they came out for the warm-ups and they all came together. And it just kind of felt a bit like a stand against the adversity that they were facing. They knew that they were coming in as firm underdogs. That underdog tag would have been worsened by the fact that Sam Morsey was out, that Amari Hutchinson record signing was out, that Jack Taylor was supposed to come in and start alongside Calvin Phillips. He was out. So many different bits going against them here, obviously even more in the game. And I think that underdog status being even greater probably gave them something else, a bit of extra impetus, and it allowed them to go back to basics as well. I think that the fact they did go back to basics played a big part in this, where I know that Kieran McKenna's been adamant about not wanting to change the style, but the first 20 minutes, first 30 minutes even, they were not playing out from the back at all. The ball would come to Muric and he'd get it up the pitch. The ball would go to the centre-back and they'd get it up the pitch. They were kind of trying to fight fire with fire a bit. I didn't think that Brentford were actually that direct, but Ipswich were, to be honest. They were not kind of messing around with it and waiting for the space to open up. They were trying to get it forward all the time. And that approach shocked Brentford, I thought. And I just think that everything that was there, everything that was working against them, altogether just ended up being that extra motivation to make it work. And that's what it did. And being able to click certain players and certain relationships together, it's a huge blow not to have Jack Clark or whoever in the pitch, or Amari or Sam Morsey. But then having the link-up, for example, between Chaplin and Hurst was really important. Having Jens Kajus come onto the pitch was really, really good. He wasn't supposed to start the game. I thought he was excellent. Things like that. That ended up working in their favour. So adversity can do strange things to teams, as we've seen with Ipswich in the past multiple times. I think this was one of those, at least in terms of the performance, even if they didn't have the result to match it.
I was against the world vibe. So that was a pre-match huddle, because obviously they normally huddle just before kickoff, don't they? But that was.
Well, they did that as well. Let me say,
that was a huddle in warm-up.
Yeah, before the warm-up, they all came out there. And they were there for quite a while, to be perfectly honest. They were all stood around for, it felt like a couple of minutes. And I like that, to be honest. It wasn't kind of like a public showing or anything like that. There weren't that many people in the ground. It wasn't supposed to be that. And I just think that internally, they're aware of what the situation is. They know that, you know, they're not blind and deaf to what they're hearing and seeing on TV. And sometimes you need that show of unity, because if there's anything that's going to keep Ipswich in the Premier League this season, it's going to be the unity on the pitch, which we definitely saw, and also the unity off the pitch, which we've still been seeing throughout this season so far, especially in the stadiums.
Yeah. Rossi, talk to me about George Hurst, because obviously we all know that you love Liam Delap, and Liam Delap is absolutely on fire. Clearly came off the bench like a man possessed. But Kieran said after the game, you know, it's his first season starting as a number nine at this level. He's not going to be able to play and start every single game. So George Hurst gets his first Premier League start and gets his first Premier League goal and an assist. And clearly there's always that chat around players who've not seen play at this level before as to whether they can make the step up. And, you know, the step up between the Championship, where we know George Hurst is a really good player, and the Premier League is huge. So for him to come in, and we've not seen him for a while in terms of starting, obviously he had the injury in pre-season, he played really well and really showed that he can compete and start at this level.
Yeah, he really stepped up, because I felt sorry for him. He's had those injury setbacks, you know, from, you know, last season, the Championship, you know, that bad timing really for him. And obviously we had to go in to bring Kiefer Moore in, and obviously he came back at the end of the season and scored, you know, that goal at Hull City on his return. And yeah, for him to step up, I think Delap obviously will be a bit disappointed. What's going on, Kieran? Why am I starting? But I think Kieran kind of said he felt George Hurst was perfect for this game, because yeah, running in from behind and stuff like that. But yeah, he really did well and he shined. I think AJ potentially gave him a good rating, I'm sure, and his player rating. Sorry, I haven't read that, but I'm sure many people have. Sorry, AJ. Subscribe only content. So
Ross can't be asked to
read. Are you saying that you're not subscribed or something?
Well, I've got free access, and
I was gonna say,
got stories. But yeah. I'm sure you gave him probably. Did you give him man of the match?
I did give him man of the match. He picked up an 8. I thought he was excellent.
Okay. Yeah, I love that.
He got an assist as well. So
subscribe and read. Ross can't be asked, but you should. Yeah. Right then, we're gonna speak to Alex about Hurst in a minute, because he was the man of the match, as you rightly said, Ross, without even looking at the ratings. But first of all, we're going to hear from George Hurst, who, as we know, is the man with my favourite accent in the Ipswich Town team. So here we go.
George, a roller coaster game ends with a bit of heartbreak. How was that one for you?
Tough way to end, if I'm honest. But a hell of a lot of positives in there as well, and I think that's what we need to focus on. You know, we will look at what went wrong and why we conceded 4 goals, because we don't want to do that. Home, definitely not away, but you're not going to win games away from home conceding 4 goals, so that's something for us to work on. But yeah, a lot of positives in there also.
Has that been the message from the manager after that, when you've been in there?
Not just the manager, from the boys, you know, between ourselves as well. It's today we've been on the wrong side of you know, something that you don't want to see happen, but ultimately we also have to focus on what we did well, and what we did well can win us games if we cut out a few of the errors. So yeah, as much as things went wrong, things also went really right.
I assume on an individual level the positives has to be there as well. You get the assist for Sammy's goal and then a really nice finish for the second.
Yeah, delighted. Obviously a bit of the gloss taken off it, you know, losing the game as we did, which is the main thing. It's not about me and my goal, it's about how we ended the game, and that's something that we'll look at next week. Yeah, it was an amazing feeling, and one that I'll remember for a long time, one that I'll be very, very proud of myself. But ultimately it means nothing, and you know, when you go and lose the game the way we did. So for me, it's just about getting back on the training pitch Monday, going, you know, getting into next weekend, hopefully getting myself back in the team again, and then scoring more goals, and hopefully coming out the right side of the result this time.
It must be great, AJ. Yes, clearly Town lost a game, but just on a personal level for George Hurst to could every single player in the Ipswich Town team would have had, they probably wouldn't kind of voice them, but they would have all had kind of, can I do it at this level? You know, I'm like, can I make the step up? And for George Hurst to go and do that on his first start must be, you know, just personally a tremendous boost for him.
Yeah, I mean, it's not the first time he's had this, is it? When he signed in the Championship, I remember there were so many question marks around him. Can he do it in the Championship? Because all these loans that he'd had not scored at the level. He'd had some pretty disappointing spells, some that he admitted were down to him, others that were down to game time. So many question marks. First game, goes and scores a brilliant goal against Sunderland and obviously really managed to keep that up until he picked up the knock in December. So he's not had, this is not the first time he's had this, and doing it at a higher level was obviously another matter entirely. I think coming into this season, it was a bit different where I'd done a few different bits of interviews and people would ask, who's the one player you'd say can make the step up to the Premier League? And aside from all the obvious names that came to my head, he was the one that I thought, in terms of his profile, I thought he was the best suited to playing in the Premier League. So it wasn't one where I saw he was starting and Liam Delap was on the bench. I thought, oh God, that's worrying. What's going on there? Oh, I'm so sorry about the noise in the background. The doorbell's just gone off and the dog's going to go mental. So it was, yeah, one of those where I didn't have that concern coming into the game because I just had that belief that he was going to be a suitable option and that he had the right characteristics to make it in the Premier League. That was really, really important. It's brilliant for him. Obviously, he's a striker that isn't purely based on goals, which I like. He's goals and assists, and he showed that again here. It's the hold-up play. It's the fact that he managed to turn into space against tall Premier League defenders and play them in and set them up and do that. He's not someone that's going to score 15 goals in the Premier League, for example, like he didn't do in the Championship. He is going to work hard, bring others into space, and I loved it. And the other thing to mention on him quickly as well is I think his mindset's brilliant because I spoke to him afterwards and he was so level-headed on everything. He's level-headed in terms of the way that he saw the game and the way that he spoke about his own moments and scoring. And doing it. He's like, oh, it's brilliant, yeah, but it doesn't really mean that much, taking the gloss off it because we didn't get it. And I came back after I'd spoken to him. I was like, oh, that was a bit all over the place. We've just lost the game. And he's talking about, oh, there's a hell of a lot of positives and it's all positive talking. It's just because his brain was so kind of, had got over it almost. I think that for supporters and potentially for a lot of players, you get to the point where after the game, you've still got those emotions. And it can take another couple of days to level, kind of come to a level-headed mindset. Yeah, I think that the fact that he managed to do that after the game, it is hard for players to talk after the game as well, I'd say, when you've got so many emotions going on. I think that was really impressive.
Yeah. How just quickly, clearly, obviously, we know Liam Delap has had a brilliant start to the season. 5 goals in 9 games now. How would you compare and contrast those two as players, AJ?
Good question. I think that at the end of the day, Liam Delap is powerhouse wrecking ball. That is the main thing. You want him up against the powerful, tough centre-backs, the ones who are going to cause you those real kind of problems in terms of physicality, which is maybe an area you could argue that Ipswich lack in. And I think that he's just got that explosiveness, and sometimes you don't need explosiveness at the start of games. So I like the kind of dynamic of having someone who can run in behind, use his movement off the ball to cause problems, play others into space, rather than someone who almost wants to do everything himself, I think is the best thing. And sometimes you need someone who does everything himself. Look at what Liam Delap did against Fulham and against Brighton, even at the end of this game. So I think that's the biggest difference for me, I'd say. It's just really good that they've got two players that I think are really good for the level, to be perfectly honest. We spoke so much about needing another striker in the transfer window and the whole Brozier thing. And we came away from that deadline day thinking this is a real blow. They've not managed to get another striker. And the prospect of having another striker in this team right now would seem absolutely ludicrous, because where would they even fit in? You've got one of the informed strikers in the league. I've seen all sorts of lovely stats on him. You would have seen things like those kind of slightly rubbish websites, I won't name any, like saying, oh, he's been linked with a £40 million move to Tottenham and Chelsea, things like that. Which is not quite, I think it's probably wider than Mark, let's say, but I love the way that he's managed to establish himself. Stat that I think would have gone around on socials recently. No player aged 21 or under has scored more goals in Europe's top 5 leagues than Liam Delap. So that's great for Ipswich. And as mentioned in that tweet, it's great for England as well in the long term.
Yeah. Ross, obviously you knew Liam Delap was going to be great. You picked him before the season to be a bit of a star. And when he came on, clearly scored, and he's just got, he's got this kind of mindset, hasn't he? Like, I see ball, I hammer ball. Like, I mean, we've seen it. Obviously, he scored against Fulham. We saw it at Brighton. We saw it here with him crashing the ball against the post. He hits the ball so bloody hard. So, he must have been impressed with Liam Delap. We also talked about Jens Kajus, because I feel like there's quite a lot of eyeballs on him in this game, coming in off injury, coming straight in to start in midfield in what was a really tough game for Town.
Yeah, I thought he did well. And I think McKenna said he hasn't really been training with the group much this week, because obviously they knew, obviously, Jack Taylor was going to start instead of Sam Morsey because Morsey is injured. But then obviously Jack Taylor gets an injury. So it's like, oh, no. But I thought he did okay. He did have one bad moment, though, where he basically passed the ball to the Brentford player and Lee scored, which was not ideal. I think that was in the second half. But yeah, it just basically wasn't a great moment for him. But overall, I thought he did okay. Especially, that's another partnership in that midfield. Kelvin Phillips, Sam Morsey were, sort of learning it a little bit. But now Jens Kajus has come in. Obviously, he's a tall lad. He's, skinny. He's not like muscly, but he is just tall. And he brings that presence, which is good. And he looks like he's just about settled into this league because, he's come from Italy. He's played in Denmark, France. Did he play in Sweden? He probably is Swedish, so I'm sure he played in Sweden. But I thought he did okay. But still, work to be done with good old Jens. But for getting chucked into this game, I thought he did okay.
And Liam Delap, as we already said, he's playing with such confidence, Rossi. Even coming off the bench, he can change things. He can make things happen. And he almost obviously got that goal, which would have levelled things up. But he's such a weapon, isn't he? Like he doesn't need a lot of space or time to create something. Clearly, we've seen him. You're laughing at me calling him a weapon, aren't you, Alex? I mean that in a little bit.
Just, it didn't really come across by the way.
He's
such a weapon.
I meant a weapon offensively. He's a monster, isn't he? We've seen him go on these marauding runs. But equally, the ball drops to him. He just goes, I'm going to smash this. He's one of these players that can make things happen.
Yeah, like, if that went in, oh my God, that would have been amazing. From, being absolutely distraught, conceding that goal, 4-3, and to go, I don't know how we somehow got a chance to even get a potential equaliser, because I thought that was done. Players were down on their feet. I'm sure Town fans, they probably left because they're like, oh, bloody hell. But for Liam Delap to somehow get that ball, because Leif Davis actually lost it, and somehow it just was pinball, and obviously Delap nicks it, and then he just gets into the box and somehow finds a way to shoot, and it just hits the bar, and it's just, he's been able to find these angles somehow. But he is a weapon of mass destruction. Somehow he just finds that space and he just levers it. Keepers in the Premier League, beware, because if Liam Delap gets any space, he will hit. Yeah. And most of the time it does go in. But unfortunately it hit the post and went out. So he's been incredible.
These ones we're seeing cannoning back off the woodwork, they are going to go in at some point as well. I always go back to Luke Wolfenden. I think he was telling you early in the season, wasn't he, AJ, that he's never seen someone hit a ball as hard as Liam Delap.
No, I don't think I've ever seen anyone hit a ball as hard as Liam Delap. It's the fact that he does it from the strangest angles, doesn't he? Like, he does it from areas where you think, what on earth are you doing? Why are you shooting from there? You've got no chance of testing the goalkeeper or doing anything like that. And he's obviously scored from those positions. He's hit the woodwork from those positions. He's forced a couple of saves from those positions. He's an anomaly in a lot of ways, because you look at what he's done statistically. So in terms of the data, sorry to do this, but I'm essentially going to try and shoot the data down here. The numbers are not great in terms of his XG output, his XGOT, things like that. And if you look at it, everyone would say it's not sustainable. You can't sustain that kind of goal-scoring form because the numbers that you're putting up are not something that you can do. You can't keep scoring and testing the goalkeeper from areas that are just stupid. But he's doing it week on week and showing that he can. He's hitting the woodwork. He's just a total menace and a total nuisance. I think that any kind of idea that he's going to stop doing that and stop being such a threat there's no real evidence to back that up, I'd say. And I like the fact he'll shoot from everywhere. I think that's probably one of the things that Kieran McKenna's said to him. If you get into an area where you think you can shoot, just why not? Have a go. Because we've seen it in training that you can do it. There's a nice bit I know from Sean Morrison's podcast talking about Cardiff, where the Cardiff owner said to them,
owner of all people, has said, if you get into, you have to shoot all the time. I want you to shoot everywhere. Like, if you get into a position where you can shoot, you shoot. And I think all the players thought that that was ridiculous. And I think that is the Liam Delap model, and he makes it work. And that shows how good a player he is.
He's scoring all sorts of different goals as well, isn't he, AJ? We've seen the blockbusters. We've seen the marauding runs and the stepovers and the highlight reel goals. But he's also, I mean, the goal he scored at the weekend was a proper striker's finish. It was lovely. It was skillful.
It was, yeah. And I think that it shows him as a really good all-round player. And it's also more than that. I know I kind of spoke about this in my analysis bit, but it's the way that he draws defenders off him. If he's getting marked by two defenders, he's probably not going to be in a position where he's going to score in a game if he's got both centre-backs on him, like in the Southampton game. But it then opens up space for other players to really cause problems, which they weren't able to do in that Southampton game, but hopefully they will down the line. It's the fact that he can create chances from deep. The Villa game is a great example of that. He picks the ball up in deep, he turns, and Villa don't expect him in those kind of areas. And then he's got a really good pass on him as well to get it out into wide areas. And he's an unorthodox striker in a lot of senses as well. You look at the first Villa goal, you'd expect a striker to essentially be on line with the two centre-backs, and he's not there. And when that cross came into him for the first goal against Villa, their centre-backs were just like, what's going on? There's no one here with us. And they don't clock onto the fact that he's further back waiting for the cutback. He's someone who I think there's going to be a bit of a stereotype of, like, maybe not an overly intelligent footballer, where it's like, I get the ball, I hit ball hard. And I think that is going to become a bit of a stereotype for him, maybe not help by the fact he's not the most wonderful speaker at the same time. But he's so intelligent on the ball. He's really, really clever. It's so much more than just goals. And that's why I think he's got such a high ceiling.
Yeah. Rossi, we've done half an hour of positives. Anything else to mention before we have to move on to the inevitable chat around negatives? Anything else you'd like to highlight? Anything you'd like to share about your first trip to the G-Tech Community Stadium? I've got a G-Tech, by the way. Fantastic bits of kit. If you want to send me another one, G-Tech, I'll take one.
Is a G-Tech? Can I ask?
It's a Hoover, mate.
Oh, okay.
I've got a G-Tech Airam Hoover. Fantastic. And I've also got a G-Tech Airam handheld pet edition, because we've got obviously a dog. And this one is it kind of, not only does it hoover up dog hair, and fortunately Benson doesn't shed too much. I know there are far, far worse breeds. I'd imagine Jasper sheds like a mother chuffer, Rossi. But this handheld hoover also like sprays out some stuff as well, so it smells nice. Anyway, cracking G-Tech. How was your trip to the stadium, Ross, and any other positives from the game?
It wasn't too bad. It does look a bit like a Lego set, though. Which
does it?
I think these modern stadiums, definitely, you know, the London-based ones, they look like a bit Lego sets. Not much character. Like Griffiths Park, I loved Griffiths Park. As an away fan, it was a great away day. Even though it was a bit of a, like, it wasn't great to look at, but in terms of just the atmosphere, pubs on each corner. But yeah, this was pretty much just in this middle of, like, you know, a housing estate, and just, yeah. But I'm sure the, you know, the away fans are in a good, like, section there. I'm sure they enjoyed the goals going in when it was 2-0 up. But yeah, as we all know what happened after that. One thing I want to mention, Jens Kyush has got to improve on his long throw. We've got a new long throw in, man. I forgot to mention that. You know, we had Jonas Knudsen a few years back, and obviously they never really worked out, to be honest. But Jens Kyush was having to use the towel to wipe the ball and try to throw it in, but it didn't really work out many times. But another positive, actually, is that I thought the defence did okay overall. You know, there's a few moments, but I thought they're pretty solid. Cameron Burgess was winning every ball, headering everywhere. Just the goals, I think the first two goals they conceded were just good goals from Brentford. You know, they just punished us in those moments. And then obviously the penalty, and obviously the fourth goal we'll get into.
We're coming on to it, Ross. Stop trying to talk this bloody negative all the time. anything else you want to add to the positive file, AJ, before we get to the negatives that Ross wants to talk about?
Yeah, one off the pitch, one on the pitch. Off the pitch, booed, top of the charts for the season so far. I loved it. Pasta was great, but it was made by the tiramisu. I quite like tiramisu. It's a recent thing for me where I'm really into them. And the one that they served up at Brentford Stadium was just brilliant. I loved it. On the pitch, again, sorry, I'm going to do a little bit of kind of foreshadowing into what we're going to talk about. I think one positive is the fact that I don't think they really deserve to lose the game based on the two incidents that we're going to touch upon, where you look at the penalty, and it is
a contentious decision. I mean, I spoke about it after the game, obviously, and I kind of lean into the fact that it was probably the right call, but it still was a contentious decision. It's one that I'm not really sure whether VAR needed to go and review that, because is it clear and obvious? Again, we're going to get into that whole debate. And the second yellow, which Harry Clark got the ball. He did. It's something that you don't see at full speed, but you do see when you watch the replays. And unfortunately, because of the stupid system, VAR can't overturn yellow cards, so he gets sent off. And those two incidents don't happen, or even if one of those incidents doesn't happen, then there's every chance that Ipswich go and get a result, even potentially a win, given the way that they played in the game. So I think that has to be seen as positive.
Okay, well, you two are clearly champing at the bit to start getting negative in this show.
Turned into a positive, yeah?
Rossi's like, yeah, bring it on, baby. So, obviously, overall, Ipswich Town lost the game. They conceded four goals. The first two goals, you say, Rossi, I don't think we can apportion any blame. They were just good goals, good Premier League goals. Again, playing against elite players, you're gonna concede some of those. Then clearly there's a question around the penalty, although personally I think it was a penalty. But the final, and I suppose the biggest talking point, has to be the way that Brentford won the game with essentially a cross from Mbeumo, who was allowed to bounce and ends up in the back of the Town net. And clearly, people have come away from that saying Aaron Murich has made another mistake. There's a big debate around, is it time to bring Christian Walton in? He's clearly, you know, a good keeper. He did well in the start of the season. And there's a lot of chat around, I guess, when we were told about Murich before the season, was that from Burnley fans, was that he will make a lot of good saves, but equally he's prone to dropping quite a few clangers as well. And we've seen both. So where do you stand on that chat, Rossi? It's always hard as well, isn't it, with the keeper? Because if you make a mistake, inevitably that's pretty much going to lead to a goal, and therefore you stand out more than anyone else. But how are you feeling about Aaron Murich as it stands?
He's not been great, has he, really? Once again, Brighton, I don't forget that game. He made some incredible saves in that match, and he kept up. He won us a point there. Obviously, in this game, he made some key saves, but I'm going to quote Roy Keane. That's his job.
Yeah.
But, yeah, that goal. I think the communication maybe with Dara O'Shea, maybe he thought he was going to, you know, kick it out. But he also had another moment in this game where Calvin Phillips, I don't know if you remember this moment, but he just sort of left it and it could have gone in. But, yeah. Some mistakes now are costing, you know, Man City game. I know it's Man City, but he made a few mistakes in that, where that was the first sort of like red flag, where you're like, well, question mark, that's the phrase, where you think, have we done a, you know, bad mistake? Because obviously Walton had an amazing game against Liverpool, I thought. But yeah, I know a lot of Town fans are not happy with him. And I do feel sorry for him a little bit, but he's got to do better there in the Premier League, where you get punished. So I'm getting close to that moment where I'm thinking, give Christian Walton a chance. But yes, McKenna's decision off course.
Yeah, I mean, so many things that go into making a call like that. And the last thing we want, Rossi, is to be in a situation where we were, I think it was under Lambert, wasn't it? With, was it Holy and Cornell, where it felt like they were sort of just placing...
Will Norris.
Yeah. One was playing one week and another was playing the other, and no one really knew who the number one was. So clearly you don't want that. AJ, what thoughts have you on this scenario?
A lot of them, and I'm not here to tell people how to think. If you think that Aaron Murich should be dropped and that Christian Walsh should be given the run in the team, that's fair enough. I don't like, again, we've touched on it, I don't like some of what I've seen online and some of the things that have been said. For starters, this is someone who has Ipswich's best interests at heart, and as any signings do, that he's not making mistakes on purpose. I think in terms of the mistakes that he's made, it's tricky, because you look at the Manchester City game. Yeah, they were difficult ones. And do they change the outcome of the game? Probably not. And they're tough moments for him. Other than that, between then and the Brentford game, can we think of that many others where he's letting a goal that's decided the game, or letting a goal that I'd even really say is his fault? There are some where you might look at it and go, oh, you know, maybe he could have done a bit better at that. But I think that because of the fact that he's made a couple of mistakes, he's getting more harshly judged. I've seen people calling him out for the goals Everton scored, for example, last weekend. I didn't see a world in which he's going to get to either of those. And mistakes do happen. We sat here saying, oh, well, Jacob Greaves has made the mistake. He passed the ball out against Villa and that led to a goal. And Axel Tuanzebe gave away a goal almost pretty much, you'd say, against Southampton. That led to them getting a result from that one. And we're not having the same debate about them coming out of the team because of the mistakes that they've made. And I just think that I understand it and I understand why people feel that way about making the change, but it is a huge learning curve for everyone. I know that there are going to be people screaming at me right now listening to this, really frustrated. But I just really think that the one thing that's going to keep this club up is supporting the players on the pitch. I don't see Muric getting dropped from the team. I'm going to be perfectly honest. I think it would be harsh at the same time. I understand that there are things that are not acceptable at Premier League level and he needs to do better at. But you also have to look at the points that he saved and the saves that he has made. I know that he has let in some poor ones, but he has also saved Ipswich as Bacon on a number of occasions. If it wasn't for him, they ship three or four at Brighton. If it wasn't for him, they lose at Southampton, 100%. Made some big saves there. I think he made seven against Brentford. Faced an absolute load of shots, expected goals. 4.11, I think. Nine of those were on target. That's a lot that he's faced there. It's not easy playing in front of a defence at the same time that has little Premier League experience, things like that. So all of those factors come into my mind. He's not immune to criticism. I criticised him over the weekend, but I do just think that unless it's something really scathing, unless it's something that continues over a long period of time, he's not the reason why Ipswich Town are losing games. He's not someone that's causing dropped points on a weekly basis. And unless he starts doing that, then I don't see necessarily a reason to change. And I don't see a reason to really be getting on his back constantly because it's not going to do anyone any good.
Yeah, I mean, dropping a player, particularly in that position where only one player can play, is a huge call, isn't it? Especially for a guy who maybe is a little bit low on confidence after what happened. To be dropped then is essentially piling on him, isn't it? From a confidence point of view. And you wonder how he'd come back from that. So, but you think it's a fair debate, AJ? Because, I mean, obviously there are loads of debates all the time around every football team about players who should be playing, players who should be dropped. And a lot of it is kind of nonsense. But do you think this is a fair conversation to have at this point?
Yeah, I get it. I totally do. And I understand why people feel this way. And I'm sure that Kieran McKenna's had those thoughts going through his head. Oh, you know, these are mistakes that I don't want my goalkeeper to be making. Is Christian Walton a safe pair of hands? Christian Walton's also played one game at this level. I don't want to kind of go totally against Ross. I thought he was fine against Liverpool. I didn't think that he made like that many outstanding saves. I thought he did okay. He was fine. And I look at what Muric has done over a long period of time, and I think that there's more going for him. There are more moments I can think, wow, he did really, really well there. He did really well against Brighton and really well against Southampton and games like that than there are against him. And I know that I think because of the fact that he's had a couple of individual moments, as I said, I think he's just getting scrutinised more. Every single pass that he makes out that isn't literally bang on, people are saying, oh, his distribution's bad. Every single nervy moment, like, I mean, there was a disappointing one against, I think it was against Everton, where the ball comes back to him, he just literally just kicks it backwards out of play. There are things he needs to be better at, but who in this team can't improve to an extent? Who in this team can't take mistakes out of their game, especially in the back line? I think that pretty much everyone has made some sort of error in the game so far. Maybe, especially in the back line, I can't think of Davis potentially, but the others have all, well, I mean, he gave away a penalty, didn't he? But the others have all kind of made mistakes there. And I just think that you have to accept that comes with the territory. And also going on the Roy Keane quote that Ross said, yeah, it is his job to make saves. It's Liam Delap's job to score goals. And we're still sat here. Yeah, exactly. And we're still sat here saying, wow, it's brilliant. He's scoring goals. And at the same time, if we're doing that, I think we do deserve, I think that Muric deserves some recognition for making the saves that he has made. Because if it wasn't for those, then Ipswich would be further down the table and have fewer points than they do right now. I really do believe that.
Hmm. Yeah, it's all magnified, isn't it, because he's a keeper. And I guess also the way he started in terms of the first game, because of the way that went, then it's always something in the back of fans' minds as well. He's always making mistakes. He's always costing us.
I think with the goal as well, I don't think it's purely down to him. Why does the defence just freeze? I know they're all expecting him to get that.
Well, O'Shea does this, doesn't he?
O'Shea just kind of stands there. I'm not really sure what Wolfie's doing. Watching it back, I mean, when I saw it in real time, when I saw it on the screens, I was like, that's a real clanger from Muric. And I think that having watched it back since there, you can appreciate that there's far more to it. And I've seen plenty of goalkeepers have made these errors. How many times have you seen a cross that bounces straight through and ends up in the back of the net? Look, he wants to do better. I'm sure he's going to be frustrated by the way that things have gone, particularly in the Man City games and then over the weekend. But I think that it's important to get behind him and recognise the good he's done as well.
Yeah, I think also the chemistry between him and the defence is a good point, given how much that defence has changed through various things already this season. So let's move on from that, Rossi. Let's talk about Harry Clarke, shall we, who the record will show had one of the worst debuts in Premier League history. Scored an own goal, gave away a penalty and got sent off. Now, in my eyes, only one of those things is actually what should have been allowed to stand, because it was never an own goal, just because he's trying to clear it and he slides into net with the ball, not an own goal. And it wasn't a red card either for me. He won the ball in the second yellow card scenario. But the penalty for me was justified. Where do you stand on all of those things? So we've got McKenna talking about VAR again to come up, which I know is something he says he doesn't want to do, but unfortunately at the moment it seems to be happening every week.
Yeah, it's going to be mentioned all the time because that was, of course, the talking point. But yeah, poor Harry. You know, he's full Premier League, you know, start or first start in the Premier League. And I think he's only the second ever player to do all three on his, which is not ideal. I don't know what the other player is, who the other player is. But
it was, I think off the top of my head, it was a Southampton player. It might have been Bednarek. I think it was in that 9-0 when they lost to Man United.
Yeah, don't worry, Harry. He didn't concede 9 goals, mate. But obviously he did get sent off. As you mentioned, the own goal, he was already on the floor and it just... He was trying his best, but
his momentum was obviously against him, wasn't he? Because he was sliding into the net. He's desperately trying to like keep his head. Yeah.
Yeah. So it can't help that. The penalty. Yeah, it was a penalty. You know, it's somewhat soft, but it is. And then the red cards. You know, Keane Lewis Potter was going down anyway, so I do feel sorry for him. And I think the ref, he just felt like he fancied it, didn't he? He just straight away didn't even have a second thought. He just went, "Yeah, yellow card. Get off, mate." I thought it was a bit, you know, unfortunate for Harry there, really. And him going up against Keane Lewis Potter, who's a really good player, you know, it was a tough afternoon for him. But I feel Harry was, you know, very, you know, hard done by for that red card. But in a way, it didn't really kill Town's momentum, because obviously they did well. You know, even though they conceded that penalty and that was scored, they obviously went on to score an equaliser and, we know the rest. But not great for Harry.
Right. Okay. Well, we know that VAR can't check yellow cards, so there was nothing that could be done there. It was involved in the penalty decision, and I'll say straight away again now, I think it was the right decision. I think it was a penalty. Yes, contact outside the box, whatever. But he brought him down. It was a penalty. Let's hear from McKenna, and then we can hear from AJ.
I really don't want to talk about the decisions, to be honest. I talked about them last week. I think it's a marginal decision. It's another marginal decision that VAR gets. In the middle of, I could say that I thought the contact started outside. Somebody else could say that the contact continued inside. I could say that I think the player was probably going down from the first contact, but what's the point? I think it would take away from an outstanding game, and I can only trust that we'll get our balance of decisions over the season. I've not seen that one back, so I don't know whether he's got a touch on the ball or not. I think if he hasn't got a touch on the ball, probably can't be too many complaints. If he has got a touch on the ball, it's probably not a yellow card. So it looked pretty close at the time. Again, our focus needs to be on the fact we need to defend both situations better in the first place.
Okay, Jay. Yellow card aside, because I've watched that back a lot of times, multiple angles, and I can't really see a foul. But what was your take on the penalty?
Just want to say I loved McKenna's reaction to that. That was great. I think that was the perfect response after a game like that. In terms of the penalty, again, it feels similar-ish to the Everton incident where Town didn't get it go for them. And it's just because it's kind of a decision that will split people. I'm not 100% sure what the rules are in terms of it started in the box, started outside the box, continued on. It's all just a little bit up in the air to me, which I don't like. I think that, I mean, here's what we know. The contact started outside the box, it carried on into the box, and it looked like Harry Clark brought him down inside the box. And it was given as a free kick. And I think that the fact that it's a contentious decision, the fact that we're sat here debating it and that Kieran McKenna said, well, I can see both sides of it, means that it's not something that should be overturned. It's not a clear and obvious error necessarily to me. And I think that if I'm the referee at the time, I give a penalty. But he didn't. And the fact that it is then a debatable thing means that I don't necessarily think that it should be getting involved. So, kind of comes to a bit of a split conclusion here where I do think it was, but then I don't think that VAR should be involved. And just a quick one on the red card. Not the doorbell again. Oh, no.
Getting loads of Amazon deliveries. What is it? Christmas
yeah, I think so. It's probably dog food, I'd imagine, things like that. Just a quick one on the penalty decision. I think that VAR, again, is the issue, not in terms of the application of it, but the rules of it. Why can you not look at a second yellow card? It's ridiculous. I don't understand why. If it's involving a player getting sent off, why you can't go back and have a closer look at that?
That is a valid point. Yeah, I mean, that's stupid, isn't it? If we're trying to take out errors that affect the game, then a player getting sent off for something he probably shouldn't have been sent off for surely should be allowed to check that.
Yeah, and those are the frustrations. And I think that we've been lucky that in terms of VAR, there was the Man City incident. To be honest, I think Dan were going to lose that game anyway. And it's only really recently that we've been sat here saying, you know, these are genuine issues with the technology or with how the technology is used. Whereas other teams, I think, seem to have it on a weekly basis and, you know, have their Twitter accounts tweeting out that the result shouldn't stand and things like that. But I'm glad that McKenna takes the view of saying, you know, we should defend the situations better. That's really good. But definite frustrations in terms of that. What happens if Harry gets sent off? I don't know. But it's going to leave them in an interesting position going into the Leicester game because they can't appeal it because it is a second yellow card. You can't go through an appeals process for that. And if there's one area that Town are lacking in, it's right back.
Perfect segue, AJ, almost as if you knew what was next up. So clearly already Town have got some issues in defence. Now Harry Clark's going to be suspended. They're kind of one of their only natural right backs, if you like. Ben Johnson, the other one, is also injured. There is an injury crisis at Ipswich Town. Rossi, I think we can call it that now, having to name two keepers on the bench at the weekend just so they could fill the bench. We know, obviously, Sam Morsey's out. Sounds like he might not be back for Leicester. Ogbene went down in this game with what looks like a potentially season-ending injury, Achilles tear. That was a non-contact thing, was it, boys? Was it just one of these things where he's running and he just...
Looked so innocuous.
Which is always the worst. Always the worst.
Yeah, went down like he'd been shot. And at the time when we saw it, it didn't look that bad, but the amount of pain he was in and then getting stretched off, it was really horrible.
Whenever you see players go down in any sport without making contact with anything, it's always, generally speaking, a bad one. Normally the knee or something has gone. In this case, the Achilles tear, so he's going to be out for a long time. Obviously, Amari was sick. Jack Taylor, we know, was meant to come in for Sam Morsey. He was also injured late on in the week. And so now we're in a situation with there's already without Jacob Greaves, already without Axel Tain, Zabi. There's serious problems mounting up here, Rossi. They've only got two fit midfielders now in Calvin Phillips and Jens Kajust, and Kajust only just come back from injury himself. Worrying times, this, in terms of available players.
Yeah, not ideal, you know, when you're in the Premier League as well, where thankfully, you know, the games aren't as relentless. It's not like Saturday, Tuesday, Saturday, Tuesday. At least there's that week break and stuff. But yeah, we are the bare bones, as you would say, in many positions. And as you said, already midfield, right back, I don't know what we're going to do at right back. It's just Darish again. And then, you know, we'll have to just rely on the defenders. But yeah, not great. We've got a great medical team who have been performing miracles and getting players back. But obviously, you're not going to be able to get these players back as soon as possible because they are going to be long-term injuries. But, you know, I mean, that's when you go and look at the youth academy and bring players through. But I don't think there's many players there who are, you know, it's a big step up. When you're in league,
it's not too bad. Yeah.
Yeah, the Premier League, you know, as I said, a lot of these have only played under-21s football. So I was surprised maybe they didn't put at least one of them maybe on the bench just to give it that experience instead of having two goalkeepers. Because what does that do, really? Like, why having two goalkeepers? Because, yeah, you're going to bring one on. Like, but that's not going to happen that often. I don't, you know, obviously a Colgate gets sent off or there's an injury, then you bring one in. But yeah, it's crisis mode for Kieran McKenna, and I'm sure he wasn't expecting this. And yeah, any free agents about? I don't know. We have to look.
maybe Slicker can play midfield as well. Maybe that's why he's on the bench.
Maybe put Muric. Muric is, you know, good with his feet, to be fair. So maybe put him in midfield and put Walton in goal. There we go. That's
there we go.
Yeah.
It's McKenna thinking outside the box again. AJ, the interesting thing is weird to me because the schedule in the Premier League is, in terms of games at least, a lot less compacted than it was in the Championship. So common sense would tell you that there would be more injuries when you're playing more games and more intensely, you know, playing midweek all the time. But I just wonder if, again, it's this step up to the Premier League where you have to be on your red line, you know, at your limit pretty much all the time, both in terms of training, clearly, and then actually in the games. Because it does seem odd that they're getting so many injuries, muscular injuries particularly.
Yeah, I think it is that for sure. I think that when you look at, for example, the Jack Taylor injury, I think it's just because they're training so hard at the moment. These are guys as well that are going away on international duty and they don't really have that much of a break at the same time. Others I just think are unfortunate because you look at the old Benet injury, that was unfortunate the way it just came from nothing. I mean, Axel Tuanzebe, that was unfortunate. Yeah. My word.
Those both fall into freak, don't they? I mean,
yeah, they do. And what you look at the other ones, Luongo, Greaves and Johnson, they're all kind of slightly out of nowhere. One of them's an illness. Sam Morsey looked absolutely fine, picked up a hamstring injury against Everton. None of us saw that at the time. So they're all things that kind of feel like they've come from nowhere. And yeah, they do leave Ipswich in a tricky position. I mean, the back line is now set in stone, in theory, to go against Leicester. We know it's
the only fit players. Yeah.
Wolfie, Burgess and Davis. I mean, God, if any of those pick up a knock in the next few days, I don't know what they do because they don't have any defenders now. They don't have any alternatives in those positions. I mean, Davis is the only one who's got any sort of support behind him with Connor Townsend. And he came on and played midfield against Brentford in stoppage time. In midfield, you also then don't have any support. If Morsey's out for this game and Taylor's not going to be back, we know that, then you've got nothing there. So already it's becoming a real issue. And also one of the problems there, I think, that you get is that aside from Ogbeni, these aren't long-term injuries, which I think makes it harder because we're talking about the free agent market, for example. You could easily go and explore that.
Rakeem Harper, Heathy. Rakeem Harper's free agent.
Legends.
Yeah.
The dream.
You then can't go and get these guys because by the time that you brought them in and got them up to speed, they haven't played all season. Whoever they're coming in to replace will be back to full fitness again. And we know how competitive Town's squad is when it's fully fit. So it's a really hard balance to find this. And it just means that they've got to try and tread a bit of water probably up until the international break. And at least, if nothing else, you've got maybe fewer players going away on internationals. You won't have Axel going away. You won't have Ogbeni going away. You won't have Jack Taylor going away. They can all stay in and recover and hopefully be ready to go post-international break.
Cometh the hour, cometh the dream. Yes. I mean, as we've already said, training-wise, you imagine all these guys are pushing their bodies further than they ever have done in terms of how they have to prepare and how fit they've got to be and how much effort it takes to train and compete every week. So fingers crossed we get some good news on that front going forward. The other one more negative I just want to mention was I don't really like these what-if, what-could-have-been sort of thing. But obviously there was an incident at 2-0 up, Rossi. Sammy Smodex could have made it 3-0. And you'd think then that would have killed the game.
Yeah, very much so. Once again, in real time, where my position was, I didn't know how important that chance was because, you know, it was a different angle. So, you know, you just thought, oh, good defending, good goalkeeping. It was a good save, to be fair. But yeah, Sammy, you thought, it's 33 goals last year, already scored in the game, should be finishing that. And that would have been a what-if moment. You know, we had Jake and Greaves at West Ham. We've had other moments like that. And yeah, 3-0. Oh, God, I don't know. You've seen teams come back from that.
Yeah,
Brentford would have just been disheartened. I don't know if they. I know they're at home. I know they've scored. They beat Wolves last time out at home 5-3. Although it wasn't in that circumstance, they weren't 3-0 down. But that's a hard scoreline to come back. And I think Town would have just defended for their lives. But yeah, as we already said, what if it didn't happen? And obviously Brentford equalised, make it 2-2, and then we know the rest.
Yeah, we'll file that away in the what if draw. Anything else to mention? AJ, because obviously we have to have a chat around FPL, which was a positive for me. really. Anything else to mention?
In terms of the game, not a lot. I quite liked the experience of going to Brentford. It's my first time there with fans. I thought the atmosphere was a little bit flat at times, but then they were 2-0 down after half an hour, so it's kind of to be expected. Nice setup. I think that they're a team that have done a new stadium well. I think they put it in a good position. It's right next to a train station. The away end's good. There was a brilliant noise from that. At 3-2 down with 10 men, I thought Town fans were just so good in terms of making the noise throughout, staying behind and applauding the players off. Thought that was really, really good to see. Yeah, I think that take aside that horrible moment at the end, I was just a really fun, enjoyable day out, and it was an enjoyable game to watch when you kind of take the bias out of it. So, yeah, I don't know if the heart rate can handle too many games like that, like we had in the Championship, for example. It was a very kind of Championship Ipswich Town game, wasn't it? But, yeah, it was an enjoyable one, nonetheless, from that sense, just not with the way it ended.
Hmm. Speaking of enjoyable, boys, I enjoyed FPL this week. I scored 74 points, which was 20 above the average. And I've been consistently at or below the average, as you all know, who listen to the show regularly, despite my tremendous efforts to be good at this. And I had a week in which pretty much every player I had scored me points. The only ones to blank were Rodgers and Konate and Flecken, I suppose, as well. Brought in Gvardiol for Saliba. He kept clean sheet and got 3 bonus points. I doubled up on Man City defenders, actually, because also I had Rico Lewis. Obviously, they were playing Southampton. I'm pleased I didn't triple captain Haaland, because obviously, although he scored, he didn't do the hat-trick business he did when Stu famously triple captained against Town. And then I had Mbeumo, obviously, 15 points. Cole Palmer, 10. Luis Diaz got an assist. Nicholas Jackson, 9 points. Haaland, 12 as captain. And obviously, the boy Liam Delap scored as well off the bench. So, all that up to 74 points for me, and I moved up, I think, about 100 places in the KOA table, which, you know, admittedly, I'm still about 800th or something. But it's progress for me. It's progress, boys. I can only go week by week and keep trying to make progress. So I feel lifted by this, because I was generally pretty deflated last week when I had such a bad week. I know everyone had a bad week, but because I genuinely am trying to be decent at this, I'm not like Watson, who just seems to be carefree and just like, oh, whatever, I don't care. Although I still think he's trying to be too cool about it, if I'm honest. I think he's probably spending a lot more time than he's letting on. AJ, I know you had a good week as well, didn't you? Because you've moved up into rarefied air.
Yeah, this is weird. I was a bit disappointed, actually, when I was looking at it. I heard you got 74. I've seen people in our chat got 72 and stuff like that. I was thinking, oh, 66 feels quite low now. This was my free hit, because those listeners who will remember me talking about Heung-Min Son and bringing him in last week, well, about 10 minutes after we finished recording, Ross put in our chat saying, oh, he's ruled out for this game, which was a blow. I didn't like that. So I then panicked and then was told, and I had to be told the rules on this one myself, that a free hit wipes out any transfers that you have made previously. They all kind of...
Oh, so you played your free hit, did you? I didn't realise.
I played my free hit, so I didn't take any points hits, which was really, really good. Essentially, so if you made transfers and you then play your free hit, then it just wipes out any sort of points hits that you would take for said transfers. They all just come under the free hit bracket, which was good. And at that point, I was like, well, in for a penny, in for a pound. Might as well just go make some changes. Went double Spurs. That was horrible. Not doing that again. Useless. Went Foden. He came in. Useless. To be perfectly honest, the players who got points were all the ones that added my team in the first place, but I didn't take any points hits. Got 66. Thank you. And Mbeumo, Lewis, Palmer, Chris Wood. Oh,
he's an absolute machine. Yeah, I heard a great stat about him. I can't remember what it is now, but it's something about essentially only Haaland and one other player has scored more goals than him in the last, since the manager change at Forest.
He's been on fire. He himself has scored more goals than Manchester United so far this season. Obviously had Haaland in there. I mean, the Wood one's great, and it is next against West Ham at home. I think he'll be licking his lips at that. Who knew when he was playing for Ipswich that he'd go on to be such a prolific Premier League striker, eh? But yeah, happy with that. I'm up to 24th in the KOA League, which is really uncharted territory. Very happy with that. But there's a big gap towards the top. I mean, I'll record with Ross later this week, but the league leader, we'll leave this as a cliffhanger, it's got quite a healthy gap on the rest of the division at the moment.
Yeah. How did you get on, Rossi?
Shit, to be honest. I'm just going to leave it there. I didn't even get the average points. That is how bad I had, a week I had. So, like, when I'm looking at it, like, all my players, that rag, got points, but they didn't get enough points to, you know, get me up to a good amount of points. So, yeah, I made two new signings in Dwight McNeil and Son as well. Obviously, he was injured, so he's on my bench. And then Dwight McNeil got 2 points. But the rest, they got points, but not enough for me. So, yeah, not a good week for me, to be honest. So we're going to move on, and we'll cover it on the FBL pod.
You already played your free hit as well, so you were totally screwed there. Shame.
Here is just some stats on Chris Wood, because they are extraordinary, right? I found them. So as a full-time on Friday, Wood was a Premier League striker who got the highest percentage of his shots on target this season. Of every regular starter in the Premier League, he ranks highest for the conversion of shots to goals. So he's only taken 18 shots in 9 matches, which ranks 18th overall. But he scored with 7 of those 18 shots. Erling Haaland's obviously the only player with as many goals as Wood. And since Nuno Espirito Santo's first game in charge of Forest in December 2023, only Haaland has scored more non-penalty goals in the Premier League than Chris Wood. These are all extraordinary stats. And he's only, what is he, 5-point-something million?
He's
is he up there now?
Currently 6.4 million.
So
I think he might have started on 6, but he's gone up quite healthy. I also like how you were rattling off stats there and Ross was nodding along. And I was thinking, if this was me talking about, if I mentioned the words XG, the amount of eye rolls I'd get, because it's Mark, it's fine. So, all right,
I'm cool with that. the other thing, I mean, we talked there about, I should obviously, let's shout out before we start talking about Premier League, let's shout out the top three. So Morsy Code, Daniel Gant, top of the league, 13-point gap now, you say, on second place, which is Bolton Wanderers, Josh Bolton, and then Skyline Drifters, Mike Marriott is third with 606 points. So 20-point gap between first and third. We'll see if Daniel can remain in that position. Still a long way to go, of course. And the other thing just to mention as well, in terms of gaps, boys, I am starting to look at the Premier League table now. It's starting to look a little bit worrying in terms of gap, isn't it? Like the kind of sides towards the bottom are going to start to get cut adrift if we're not careful. And that's obviously clearly what part of what makes Saturday's game a big one as well. He says trying to get the Premier League table up. But we don't want to see those gaps going up much more, do we, AJ?
No, we don't. I mean, I was talking about the fact that they were kind of dropping points and the gaps were not getting that much bigger recently. Now you're looking 18th to 16th is 5 points. That is
fairly
significant. And as well, the fact that people, I mean, Palace winning over the weekend was not what we wanted to see. That was really not good. Wolves, you would imagine, will get better. They just can't defend, seemingly, but they score lots of goals. Wolves against Crystal Palace is the next game this weekend. That is a very significant game, followed by Wolves against Southampton.
Oh, hello.
After that. So I think that we're going to get a clearer picture of where we are soon enough. I mean, look, these things can change very quickly. Ipswich can improve and maybe, who knows, maybe they'll have a really crap run until December and then January or February or something like that. They'll win 3 or 4 on the bounce and everything changes. It can change really quickly, but the Premier League is so tough in that way. And we've seen it with Luton in the past that you can give yourself too much to do. You can run it late, but ultimately you're then going to have to better the results of teams like Everton, like Leicester, like Crystal Palace, like potentially West Ham at this point, or even Man United, who knows, who are just getting kind of dragged down the table, and they're all, as we've seen in the flesh now, with some of them really good football teams.
Yeah, if you look at the gap now, so Ipswich obviously now in 18th, 2 points behind Palace, and any time that you're in a scenario where you need a win, like a swing of a win and a defeat or whatever to then overtake the team above you, it always worries me. And then Everton and Leicester now, 15th and 16th, 9 points. So they're already now 5 points clear of town. Which starts to look a little bit worrying, doesn't it, going forward. Anyway, friends, let's not worry about that just yet because there's still plenty of games left, plenty of points to play for, starting this weekend, obviously, with a big game against Leicester on Saturday. Just by way of starting to wrap up, just a reminder that we're coming up on KOA 500. I think this is KOA 490, I want to say.
9-1, I think.
Is it 9-1? We're estimating that the KOA 500 may come towards the start of December, aren't we? Because generally we do two of these a week, not counting the FPL, which is a standalone thing. These are the numbered flagship shows. And we want your input as well, because we're going to do a special show around KOA 500. I've already had quite a few emails to that effect, so thank you if you sent them in. I have got them all. I'm not going to reply to all of them, because then I'd be replying to a lot of emails. We have also started to get pictures in as well. If you've got any pictures of you with the stars of the show, in this case, it's I think it's Charlotte sent in a picture of her with Stewie and Hutchie from 2022. So if you've got any pictures of yourself relating to KOA, please send them in with your email as well. I just want to hear really how long you've been listening for, where you listen from, favourite moments, all that kind of thing. Your KOA story, really. And we want the KOA 500 to be a bit of a look back and a celebration of the podcast to date, because 500 shows is a lot. We've been doing it for a long time. So hopefully you're still enjoying it. And also on that note, in terms of KOA as a podcast, as a community, really sad news over the weekend. We've heard this morning, a big listener to the show, a huge Town fan as well, Tom Tomlin, has very sadly passed away, which is really, really sad news. A guy who clearly had challenges in terms of physical disabilities, but he was such a positive, friendly, nice guy. Every time we saw him, he was always cracking jokes and being pretty positive. I remember we saw him, I think we met him, or at least I met him for the first time, at the first friendly post-COVID where we could have fans back, Rossi. Was it Dartford?
Yeah.
And he was waiting for his taxi after the game, and we had a really good chat with him then. So it's just really sad news, Rossi. A huge Town fan. I think I saw someone tweet this one at one point. He won Town Fan of the Year back in the kind of 80s.
Yeah, it was a presence. I always saw him at every away game, you know, a few home games. You know, if I ever saw him at home games, I'm sure he was at every home game you could get to. But yeah, just a lovely bloke. And yeah, he obviously loved the podcast. So we'd always talk about it. I remember I was in the same hotel at Plymouth away. We were in the same hotel. I just was like, oh, hello, Tom. And we had like breakfast together, which was a nice little thing. But a lovely, lovely bloke. And yeah, with all, you know, what, in disability and stuff that he had, he still went to all these games, which is incredible. So rest in peace, Tom.
Yeah, really sad. Obviously, our thoughts with Tom's family. You probably bonded with him, AJ, over your combined love, your shared love for Taylor Swift. Because I know, other than Ipswich Town, I think Tom's second biggest love was Taylor Swift. Clearly, we know you're a big Taylor Swift fan. But just really sad news. Really good guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, most of my contacts with him has come over social media. His love outside of town was really strong. He was a really massive fan of, definitely Taylor Swift was one. And anytime that I went to watch Hamilton, he was quite excited that I'd gone and see that thing, things like that. Was it Little Mix? He was a big fan.
Oh, he's a big fan of Little Mix as well. Yeah, yeah.
I loved that. And that's what colours you kind of as a person, things like that. But the biggest thing for me was how determined he was to go and watch Ipswich Town, because with everything that he had to deal with to go and do that, it must have been such a struggle. And he went no matter what, almost. I first met him at Blackburn away with Stu. It was really nice to see him. He was really kind of excited to meet me, which I really liked. And you could see how much everything at the club meant to him. It's no surprise to me to hear that he was named Supporter of the Year a while ago and things like that. A great presence at games and online, and definitely someone who will be missed. So I'm sure that we're all really sad to hear that news. It did come as a huge shock to me, and I'm sure the rest of us, and will be a massive miss for everyone at the football club.
Hopefully we can do something this weekend, maybe with a minute's applause or whatever. Just it'd be nice to have a little tribute to him this weekend, wouldn't it? In a big game at Portman Road, which he would have loved. All right, friends, anything else to mention before we take our leave? Have you got anything else to mention? I mean, obviously, Rossi, the Ipswich Town ladies, had an absolutely stonking win yesterday, 13-0. Good Lord. I think they play the same team again in the FA Cup, don't they, on this weekend? So
yeah.
What the combined, it's going to be a cricket score, combined score.
Yeah, there is a bit of context to this, though. Even though, you know, it was a really good performance, a professional performance from the Town women's team, you know, they were just relentless, just scoring goals for fun. It was 7-0 at half-time. The scoreboard at Felixstowe can only go up to 9. No. So they had to re... So
that's someone standing next to it with it.
Yeah, technically it's only 4-0. It was only 4-0 on the scoreboard. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. But yeah, a bit of context. MK obviously have got new ownership, but obviously they had 28 players leave last season. They haven't really got a manager. They're basically playing all their youth players. I think there's a lot of 16, 17-year-olds. But you play against whoever you're fielded against, and you play as you normally would do. So
of course, yeah.
I did feel sorry for them a little bit. Like, but then they weren't disheartened. Like, they're in the clubhouse, the MK players, and obviously they're having their food, and they were, you know, smiling and happy and stuff. They, at the end of the day, this is just probably good. Well, not good experience. They just lost 30-0, but you know, they're just playing against, you know, a proper good Ipswich Town team. But yeah, they've got to come back next week in the FA Cup. Obviously, if they lose, they win prize money, because that's what the FA Cup's all about. It's good that they can get some money. I think they get a grand if they lose. So it's like, at least that pays for the coach travel there and back. Mm. But a bit of context, they did play a very young team, but they're having a really good season, Ipswich Town women's team. This could be a year that they could finally do it. And obviously, last time they're in this sort of position, they missed out on goal difference. So that is a key thing here.
Okay.
Their goal difference is 33 at the moment, which is fantastic. But yeah, 13-0. Yeah, it will be a cricket score next week as well, probably.
Should shout out as well, Rossi, the legend, Natasha Thomas, just adds to her legend.
Unbelievable. And she played as well.
I couldn't believe it when I saw that not only she played, but she also scored, because she's obviously been travelling to play for Jamaica. But clearly, you know Natasha well, and she is a legend, a proper legend of Ipswich Town football. But that must mean a tremendous amount to her to be playing international football now as well.
Yeah, incredible. Yeah, she's record goal scorer, record appearance maker, and now the first ever Ipswich Town women's player to win a senior cap for Jamaica. They're playing France. They lost 3-0, but she came off the bench. And I'm sure for her, you know, on her dad's side, her dad's, you know, from Jamaica. And for that, just unbelievable, you know, moment for her. And she's gone through it as well. Like, she's not gone through the same journey as some of these players who have come through academies and stuff. She sort of started at grassroots, signed from Lowestoft Town back in 2015, I think it was. And she's just had an unbelievable journey. So, yeah, big up Natasha Thomas, because, yeah, she's an absolute legend and obviously a trustee for the foundation as well. But, yeah, she's just hitting all those record breakers and, yeah, great player as well, scoring goals is fun.
Yeah, doing stuff that's never been done before. Great stuff. Congratulations, Natasha. AJ, anything else from you to mention?
Carabao Cup this week. How happy are we that Town are not in the Carabao Cup? Because, that would be
any thought of that competition.
Awful. Awful. Imagine that you've got this injury crisis and then you've got to go to Stoke or something like that. I know that Southampton are only up to Stoke, or they're playing Stoke for sure. Just imagine how difficult that would be. So, no further business really, but I'm just happy that Town have a full week on the training ground to go into the Leicester game, albeit that they're seemingly doing something in training that's might be picking up a few knocks. Hopefully they can knock that one on the head and get a few players back as soon as possible.
I hope all those defenders are literally wrapped in cotton wool when they're training this week, or they're wearing those big Zorb balls. They're just bouncing off each other. Get no injuries in training, please, boys. We need them all fully fit this week. Right then, friends, that brings us to the end of the show then. We've gone a little bit over. We've tried to be positive today, because I feel like although the nature of the defeat was clearly heartbreaking and dramatic and horrible in the way it ended, there was a lot to be positive about from the performance. And obviously, as AJ said, got to stay behind the boys. Big game this weekend, and things can change pretty quickly. And once again, we get a chance to go again at Portman Road against Leicester City this weekend. We'll be back later on this week to build up to that. In the meantime, just a reminder to support our sponsors. Use the code KOA at manscaped.com for 20% off and free delivery. All their excellent clobber there. Leave us a 5-star review on iTunes. We had a few of those recently. It's really nice, A, to see that people enjoy the show, and also because the reviews help lift us in the algorithm and helps more people find us. And also follow us across all social medias, Kings of Anglia on YouTube, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and TikTok. I think I remembered them all. Right then, friends, have a great start to your week. We'll be back later on this week to talk to you again. Until then, have a good one.
Bubba Wallace here from 2311 Racing. Funny thing about being fast, you end up waiting a lot. First to show up, first in line, then just waiting. Me, I rev up Chumba Casino. With over 200 social casino games, no slow lanes here. Why sit around when you can spin? I'm already racing. Your turn. Play for free at ChumbaCasino.com. That's Chumba.
Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.